Okay. All right, as kids head out, last Sunday morning, you remember we got finished in our study of the book of Ephesians, and mentioned that Brother Jack was going to get started, he's actually already got started on a couple of lessons already for us, so he's going to pick up where he's left off in 2 Peter, and looking forward to that. Folks, listen, I've had a lot of blessings as being pastor of Trinity Baptist Church. One of the great blessings I enjoy here is having Brother Jack as my assistant, and I hope you realize that's a great blessing that you have as well. He's a faithful man, got a great family, and of course the Lord's hand is upon him. And so we're looking forward to this. Brother Jack, you come on and begin to teach us this morning.
All right, if you have your Bibles, turn to Second Peter chapter 2. Second Peter chapter 2. Get 1 Corinthians chapter 10, if you will. We may start right there this morning in 1 Corinthians chapter 10. Appreciate again the opportunity to be up here. I do enjoy teaching. I enjoy preaching. I often say that this is as high up the totem pole as I want to go. I don't ever want to be a pastor. I like to preach and I like to teach. I don't like to have to listen to people. I like people to listen to me. So I guess if you go any higher on the totem pole, God gives you grace to do it. But, whew, God bless Brother Dilbert and anybody else that has to do that stuff. I tell you, that counseling and talking to people, I know it's strenuous to want something for people and have them want it for themselves, but just be snared to where they just have a hard time with it, and you sit there and you have to weep with them when they weep and be joyful when they have victories in their life, and it's a long process. And you all know me, I don't have any patience at all. So that's just the way things are. And I'm the type that if I'm in a hurry, I can be 20 minutes early, be going somewhere, and still be mad because somebody's going slow in front of me. And I'm thinking, I'm not even behind. But I feel like something's holding me. Begins to reference the Old Testament. Because when he references the Old Testament, there's a reason for it. And in 1 Corinthians chapter 10, he says this, the Apostle Paul talking to the church at Corinth, he says, "Moreover, brethren, I would not that you should be ignorant." And when he says ignorant, he's not talking about just being an idiot. He's talking about not knowing what it is he's talking about. So he's trying to give them some information here. And he says, "Moreover, brethren, I would not that you should be ignorant how that all our fathers were under the cloud and all passed through the sea. And we're all baptized unto Moses in the cloud and in the sea, and did all eat the same spiritual meat, and did all drink the same spiritual drink, for they drank of that spiritual rock that followed them, and that rock was Christ. But with many of them God was not well pleased, for they were overthrown in the wilderness." Now look what he says here. He begins to say, "Now these things were our examples, to the intent we should not lust after evil things, as they also lusted. Neither be ye idolaters as were some of them, as it is written, the people sat down to eat and drink and rose up to play. Neither let us commit fornication, as some of them committed, and fell in one day 23,000. Neither let us tempt Christ, as some of them also tempted, and were destroyed of serpents. Neither murmur ye, as some of them also murmured, and were destroyed of the destroyer. Now all these things happened unto them for ensamples, and they are written for our admonition, upon whom the ends of the world are come. Wherefore let him that thinketh he standeth take heed, lest he fall." Now, what he's saying here is he's got this Old Testament, and it's recorded here in the New Testament for our example, for just an illustration there to see what happens when people act a certain way. And what he does is he takes these examples and he says, "Look, here's what these guys were doing, and they got overthrown. They got destroyed by the destroyer. And all you have to do is, as a Christian, if you want to know what happened to them, is you look at those references up, you go back to the Old Testament, you can read that, and you can see what God, what His thought about those sins were and what He thought should happen to people that committed those types of sins. And so what He did was, as He says, I'm going to write these things down as an example. And illustrations are good to use to teach people. And if you have illustrations for your kids, when you see another child that's messed up or made some wrong decisions in his life, and you begin to see where it leads, while you have that child there, I'm not talking about, you know, making stuff up on a kid, but when something's exposed and it's obvious and everybody knows about this child and what he's been through, it's good to take your child aside and say, look, this is the road that leads to. Look how much fun he had in step one. Look how much fun he was having in step two and step three and step four. And then look where he's at today. Now, yesterday we went and I went to Cookeville and played in an over 40 softball tournament. that's funny. We turned four double plays like in back-to-back-to-back innings, and I said, man, I've never seen so many double plays in softball. It's amazing. And I was walking off the field, and it dawned on me, all these men are over 40. They got over 40 speed. No wonder we're turning double plays. It was hilarious. It was a funny tournament. Honestly, it was. Bill Hall was there. He couldn't move. He trying to wear pants he wore back when he was 15. Oh, man, we're all, it's hilarious. It was funny. But as we're all sitting there and we're talking, most of the people that are in that tournament are people that finally grew up in life, and they ain't played for 20 years. And we begin to talk about stories about people that we knew when we played softball and the road that led to, that they never got out of that lifestyle, and they still kept doing those things and where that life went to. And you sit there and you're looking back, and we're sitting there, and I had Joshua with me. And they're sitting here and they're naming these guys that they played with and all these big tournaments and these guys that back in their 20s were these big superstars and the softball circuit, they all knew who they were and they were getting paid. I never got paid to play. But these guys that they're talking about were, you know, these guys playing that Smoky Mountain Classic, they just stand there and hit home runs all day long. And they're all broke down. They're all either in jail. They're all on drugs or in jail for drugs or dealing drugs. And it was good for Joshua to sit there, because on the way home I began to say, now look, son, you see, that's what happens to those lifestyles. Those guys were living it up in their 20s, and now look what's happened to them. So the point I'm making is the examples are always good to teach by, and never miss an opportunity. As when you have a child and you're trying to teach that child and you're raising that kid, it's always good to try to talk to a kid about a problem that they may have when they're 18 that they don't have when they're 8, because at 8, they don't have a desire to do that. If a person waits till a kid's 18 years old and they've got a desire to do that at that moment, you're not going to be able to give them examples at that point. But if you can get a hold of them when they don't have the desire, they're sober-minded, and you begin to get them to hate those types of things when they're that age, that's going to help them when they get to be 18 and 19. So it's always good to teach with illustrations. And that's what God's doing here in 1 Corinthians chapter 10. He says, look at this stuff. This is what these guys were going through. And you got all these problems here. And we're looking at this. And this is what happened to this one. This is what happened to this one. This is what happened to this one. And look back over in 2 Peter. Go back to 2 Peter chapter 2. 2 Peter chapter 2. And the reason I say that is because God here is using the Apostle Peter as he's writing this book. And he begins to talk about some judgments. And this morning, I want to talk about judgment and what happens with judgment and why God judges people and what to look for. I mean, you know, how do you know God's getting ready to judge you? That's some things we want to look at this morning. In 2 Peter chapter 2, we got through the first three verses there. And we'll pick it up in verse 3. It says this, and through covetousness shall they with feigned words make mention of you, whose judgments now of a long time lingereth not, and their damnation slumbereth not. And when right there where it says they with feigned words, the they are the false prophets up in verse 1. And verse 4 there, here's what he says. He goes through three judgments here in these next few verses. Listen here in verse 4. He says, for if God spared not the angels that sinned, but cast them down to hell, and delivered them into chains of darkness to be reserved unto judgment, and spared not the old world, but save Noah, the eighth person, the preacher of righteousness, bringing in the flood upon the world of the ungodly, and turn the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah into ashes, condemn them with an overthrow, making them an ensample unto those that after should live ungodly, and deliver just Lot, vexed with the filthy conversation of the wicked. So he goes through these illustrations here, these judgments that he's had, and one are these angels. Now, I'm not going to get into this right here, because when I was in 1 Peter, we went over this in a pretty detailed time there, and went over all that, and it was pretty detailed, so we're not going to go over that this morning. But one thing that you need to realize is this: God didn't spare angels. I mean, you've got some creatures up there that's right there with the Lord, and it shows this: God's pure, and God's interested in doing right. And it don't matter who it is. I mean, if it's me, and I'm sitting here, and I'm having to cast judgment on my son, maybe I'm a judge, and I'm sitting here looking at this thing, and he's done something worthy of death, I'm going to be emotional. You know what I'm saying? I'm going to look at my son, and I'm going to say, ah, he just killed one person, man. Do we have to kill him? You know, you got that stuff in you that wants to just... God's not that way. God is pure. And when God looks at a situation, He is going to do the right thing no matter what. And He done the right thing so much. Here's what He did. He looked down on our creation that He created, and here we are down here, and we've messed up, and we have no way to get to heaven. And God looks at it, and God, He can't just turn His head and say, well, that's okay. He sends His own Son to pay our penalty, to pay our price. You say, what'd He do? He had to take care of it Himself. You say, why? Because He's true. He's right. And when it comes down to God, He is always going to do right. He's going to always do the right thing. And so the thing that you see here with these angels is that if God didn't spare those angels, what about me? When I do something wrong, when I make the wrong judgment, when I follow after my flesh instead of following, you know, there are so many things that we just turn a blind eye to and we act like it is no big deal. I mean, gossip, just talking about somebody, honestly, we can gossip and we get so cold about something like that sin because, you know, most of us has got so much bigger stuff to worry about, you know. If I'm going to pray and ask forgiveness, I can start right at the top, man. This is down at the bottom. But see, God looks at that thing like He does anything else. He don't like backbiting. He don't like any of that stuff. And when He looks at it, we don't have the same attitude about it that God has. When you see these angels here in verse 4, you ought to realize that God's interested in every one of us doing right all the time. Over in 1 John, He says, if any man sin, he have an advocate with the Father, Jesus Christ the righteous. But before that, look over there. Get over there at 1 John. Hold your place there in 2 Peter. Just turn a few pages to your right there. 1 John. Get chapter 2. 1 John chapter 2, and look at verse 1. Look what He says. My little children, these things write I unto you that you sin not. You know what God wants us to do? He don't want us to sin. Any sin. You know, now we're thankful that it goes on to say, and if any man sin, we have an advocate with the Father, Jesus Christ the righteous. We've got a way to get rid of it. But He don't want us to sin. I mean, His attitude is, just don't do it. Just stop. That's what He says. All right, so there back over there in 2 Peter chapter 2 and verse 4, the point is this: if God spared not the angels that sinned, you know what? He's not going to spare us judgment. You say, well, I'm a child of God. Well, maybe you are a child of God. Then you've got that taken care of. You've got eternity taken care of. Praise the Lord. When you die, you know where you're going. But you're not dead right now. And God will take us to the woodshed, and we can have judgment coming. And so, you see here, you've got these angels, you've got Noah, you've got Sodom and Gomorrah. And what begins to happen is as he goes through here, you realize there is some judgment coming for some things. Now, let's look at judgment. Let's get Daniel chapter 5. Daniel chapter 5. Daniel chapter 5, the story is you've got this king here of Babylon, and you got Nebuchadnezzar who, when he brought those captives over, he brought these cups of silver and gold that the Hebrews had used in the temple that were sanctified. And so when Nebuchadnezzar takes the children of Israel and brings them to Babylon, they go into captivity, he brings all those cups of silver and gold and brings all that stuff with him, and he puts it in storage. And so as Nebuchadnezzar gets that stuff, then this other king comes up, Belshazzar, and Belshazzar goes a step further with this. He's so filled up with pride himself, he starts throwing this party. And they're all sitting around there, and they're all drunk. And when you get drunk, you get to where you're not sober-minded, and your attitude begins to change. And so the king's sitting there, Belshazzar, and he says this, "Hey, I know what we can do. Let's get all those gold and silver cups that the children of Israel had, let's bring them in here and let's start drinking out of them. Let's just defile those cups. Let's just have us a big party." And that's what they begin to do. Now let's look at this in Daniel chapter 5, verse 3. It says, "Then they brought the golden vessels that were taken out of the temple of the house of God, which was at Jerusalem. And the king and his princes, his wives and his concubines drank in them. They drank wine and praised the gods of gold and of silver, of brass, of iron, of wood, and of stone." Verse 5, "In the same hour came forth of a man's hand and wrote over against the candlestick upon the plaster of the wall of the king's palace, and the king saw the part of the hand that wrote. Then the king's countenance was changed." And what happened was this right here. He's sitting there and they're beginning to drink out of these vessels, and they look over there and a man's hand goes up there and starts writing on the wall. And it's God's hand. He's not happy. God's not happy. Now, what he begins to do is it begins to bother him. What's these words here? What do they mean? So he gets Daniel out and tries to talk to Daniel about this. Look at verse 17. "Then Daniel answered and said before the king, 'Let thy gifts be to thyself, and give thy rewards to another. Yet I will read the writing unto the king and make known to him the interpretation.'" Now look as he begins to go through here and use an example here to show him where he messed up at. Examples are good. Examples are good. Here's what he says. Verse 18, "O thou king, the most high God gave Nebuchadnezzar thy father a kingdom and majesty and glory and honor. And for the majesty that he gave him, all people, nations, and languages trembled and feared before him. Whom he would, he slew, and whom he would, he kept alive. And whom he would, he set up, and whom he would, he put down. But when his heart was lifted up and his mind hardened in pride, he was deposed from his kingly throne, and they took his glory from him. And he was driven from the sons of men, and his heart was made like the beast, and his dwelling was with the wild asses. They fed him with grass like oxen, and his body was wet with the dew of heaven, till he knew that the Most High God ruled in the kingdom of men, and that he appointeth over it whomsoever he will. And thou, his son, O Belshazzar, hast not humbled thine heart, though thou knewest all this." There's a whole lot of stuff that we know. There's a whole lot of things that we see other people go through. And you know what we always think? I can get by with it. That ain't going to happen to me, what happened to him. I can control it. I can just do it one time. I can just, you know, one guy sets up here and he ends up getting a job, and he meets this lady, and they begin to see each other, and they begin to get friendly with each other, and it keeps going and it keeps going, and a family gets destroyed. Guy sees that. He goes in, all of a sudden, some lady gets hired, they begin to get friendly, and though he knows it, he's thinking, "I won't go no farther. I won't go no farther." And what happens is, this guy goes down the same road and does the same thing. And that's what happens with sin, and that's what happens with judgment. And he says in verse 22, "Though thou knewest all this." Look at verse 23. "But hast lifted up thyself against the Lord of heaven, and they have brought the vessels of his house before thee, and thou and thy lords, thy wives, thy concubines have drunk wine in them, and thou hast praised the gods of silver and gold, of brass, iron, wood, and stone, which see not, nor hear, nor know, and the God in whose hand thy breath is, and whose are all thy ways, hast thou not glorified." And we do the same stuff. We do the same stuff. Now, we glorify a guy because he can drive a race car 200 miles an hour and can win a championship. And we praise kids that are 12 and 13 years old because they can run a 40-yard dash fast. And we praise people and we praise bosses because they're over us and we think they're this or that. We do the same thing here in America. And we praise our kids more than we praise God. We'll brag on our kids about what our children have done. And well, my kid did this and my kid did that. And go weeks at a time without ever talking about somebody. Let me tell you how good my God is. Let me tell you what God did for me. And here's what he's saying right here. He's saying, look, here's your problem, Belshazzar. You've praised these golds of silver and wood and stone. They can't breathe. They can't talk. They can't do nothing. And you ain't glorified God. And we as American Christians, we do the same thing. And then he goes on to say this. And this is the writing that was written. Many, many tekel upharsin. This is the interpretation of the thing. Many, God hath numbered thy kingdom and finished it. Thou art weighed in the balances and art found wanting. Perez, thy kingdom is divided and given to the Medes and Persians. Then commanded Belshazzar, and they clothed Daniel with scarlet and put a chain of gold about his neck and made a proclamation concerning him that he should be the third ruler in the kingdom. For what, 8 hours? In that night was Belshazzar, the king of the Chaldeans, slain. And Darius, the Median, took the kingdom, being about 62 years old. You say, what happened? What happened when judgment fell on Babylon? They were living it up. Life was good. You say, man, things are good in America. I know it's not as good as it used to be, but man, it ain't like these third world countries. But one of the characteristics of God's judgment, it's not that things are bad. These guys are having a party. Life's good. They're inside this big walled city that they said that they could have chariot races on top of the wall. It was so wide. They had races on top. Kind of like we have races that were, just like I was talking about NASCAR. It's kind of odd, ain't it? Anyway, they had these chariot races up there. There's nothing can get in there, and there ain't nothing they can do. Now, what I heard was, here's how they got in, is they stopped the river. There was a river that ran through the middle of the city, under the walls. And they blocked the river. They dammed up the river. The water came out, and they came under the wall, came in the city, and took them. You say, what happened? Life was good when judgment came. Life was good when judgment... So when it comes to judgment, don't think just because life's good that God ain't going to bring some judgment. Look at 9-1-1. Now, things are good. Those people, man, if you've ever read those stories of those people, they're going through a normal day. They're just getting up, going to work like any other day. And then what happens is that comes in there, God lifts His hand off of America for just a little bit just to show us what happened. I heard a preacher preaching one time, and he was talking about 9-1-1. It was the anniversary. I was listening to this tape, and here's what he said. He said, we're getting ready to have the anniversary of 9-11. He said, and here's what I want you to pray. He said, last year when that happened, what everybody prayed for was God's mercy. God's mercy and God's grace. God, help us get through this. He said, here's what I hope that you'll pray this year. Say, God, we want you. That was the problem. We didn't want God. We wanted just His mercy. And what God was getting on them right here about was is they weren't interested in God. And what would really help America today, you say, what would change America if God's Christians in America would begin to pray, I want a relationship with you. I want you, God. I ain't worried about nothing else. I want you. That would stay God's hand of judgment. And now look over in Leviticus 18. Get Leviticus 18. You talk about what's some things that God don't like that He would judge somebody for. Well, when the children of Israel were down in Egypt for 400 years and in bondage, you had a bunch of countries that had life and they were living it the way they wanted to live it. The Amorites and the Jebusites and all those guys, they had this land. And God said this. Here's what God said. God said their cup's not full yet. In other words, God's got a limit. And He's going to let somebody go, and He's going to let somebody go, and He's going to let somebody go. And then you know what happens? He says, that's enough. And what God did is He brought the children of Israel into those lands and took over those lands. Took them away from those guys. You ever read through the Bible and feel sorry for the other people? You ever done that? I have. I was like, oh, man. I mean, it's good to be on the winning team because then everything's good, you know. It's like those guys that's guarding the tomb and was guarding Peter there in Acts chapter 12. I mean, the Lord comes in the middle of the, these guys are on the job. They're doing what they're supposed to be doing. They're not lazy. I mean, how do you defend against an angel of the Lord, you know? And they're doing their job, and the angel of the Lord comes in there, gets Peter out. You know, you're talking about a great escape. Peter gets out. It's so good that people that's praying for Peter to get out of jail, when Peter shows up, that lady slams the door back and says, I think it was Peter. No, it was his spirit. I mean, they got an answer to prayer, got Peter out of jail, and then they didn't believe it actually happened. Oh, they kill those guys because they let them go. You know, I never sat there and thought, man, I'd have hated to be in that guy. I mean, that guy's doing his job. He's thinking about moving up the corporate ladder. He's dead. And here you got these guys over here and these other, all these nations over here. I mean, you know, they got kids and they got wives and they got all this stuff. And God judges them. He's going to kill them all. God says, go kill every one of them. What did they do to deserve something like that? What happened? Well, God tells us in Leviticus chapter 18. In Leviticus chapter 18, here's what he's telling the children of Israel. When you go into this land, here's what I don't want you to do. Leviticus 18 verse 20, he says, moreover, thou shalt not lie carnally with thy neighbor's wife, to defile thyself with her. But that never happens in America. Verse 21, thou shalt not let any of thy seed pass through the fire to Molech, neither shalt thou profane the name of thy God, I am the Lord. So you can't let none of your seed, in other words, don't be killing these kids. Abortion. Abortion. Verse 22, thou shalt not lie with mankind as with womankind. It is an abomination, no matter what anybody says. Amen. Homosexuality. Amen. So you've got abortion, you've got adultery, you've got homosexuality. Neither shalt thou lie with any beast to defile thyself therewith, neither shall any woman stand before a beast to lie down thereto. It is confusion, bestiality. Verse 24, defile not ye yourselves in any of these, for in all these the nations are defiled which I cast out before you. And the land is defiled. Therefore I do visit the iniquity thereof upon it, and the land itself vomiteth out her inhabitants. Ye shall therefore keep my statutes and my judgments, and shall not commit any of these abominations, neither any of your own nation, nor any stranger that sojourneth among you. For all these abominations have the men of the land done which were before you, and the land is defiled. You say, what happened to those people that was there? Why'd God judge them? For those reasons right there. You say, who's doing that right now? That's America. That's America right there. What we just read is America. And, I mean, you had that deal a couple weeks ago with that with Chick-fil-A. You see the attitude. You have the Chicago mayor sitting there. We don't want anybody that's got any kind of attitude like that to come to Chicago. The guy in Pennsylvania said the same thing. The guy there in Boston says the same thing. We don't want people that believe in a straight marriage to be a part of our city. That's the attitude of America. That's the way they're looking. Is everybody that way? Not everybody. And man, I'm glad to see so many people went out there with Chick-fil-A that day. I mean, that's a blessing to me to think, you know, at least some people, you know, and the droves of people that went out there, I was encouraged by what was seen. But that don't change the fact that we see where America's going. Look over at Isaiah chapter 3. Isaiah chapter 3. When God's judgment begins to come, it's for certain reasons, and we see America's like that. And we know that things are good. In Daniel chapter 5, things was good. I mean, they're throwing a party. They're having a good time. Even when Daniel tells him, look, it's over for you, bud. He's sitting here making Daniel promoted. He still ain't getting it. He don't realize this thing is about over. And then here in Isaiah chapter 3, you begin to see when God begins to judge, here's something else that begins to happen. Isaiah chapter 3, verse 1. For behold, the Lord of hosts, doth take away from Jerusalem and from Judah the stay and the staff, the whole stay of bread and the whole stay of water. Now look what in verse 2, what he begins to take away. The mighty man and the man of war, the judge. I mean, our judges, man, are going down the tubes. It's going down the tubes. They're not about judging right. They're about trying to decide. They legislate from the bench and decide, well, this is what I think should happen. This is what I think they meant by the Constitution. All you got to do is look back and see how they ruled on things, and you know what they meant by the Constitution. And the judge is gone, is what he says, and the prophet. I mean, there's only a handful of people that preach things the right way anymore. It says, and the prudent, people that have wisdom, people that have discernment, people that make decisions the right way, the prudent, that's what I'm going to take away. The ancient, the captain of 50, the honorable man. I mean, man, back in the day, they used to have honorable men, not anymore. It's all getting taken away. And the counselor, and the cunning artificer, and the eloquent orator. Now, look what he says in verse 4. And I will give children to be their princes, and babes shall rule over them. We're ruled by children today. We're ruled by children. And the people shall be oppressed, every one by another, and every one by his neighbor. I mean, you don't have to sit here today. There's people alive today that'll tell you, when I grew up, we didn't lock the doors. We didn't lock the doors. When I grew up, I didn't have a front door key. Our door didn't even lock. People talk about in the summertime raising their windows and letting the air flow through there, not a screen on it. They would sleep at night with the windows open. I mean, a guy didn't have to figure out how he's going to get inside that window and open that window and get inside there and be able to steal something. They left the windows open. You say, what is that like that today? No, people have gated communities, walled cities today to live in because they're scared. It says, and the people shall be oppressed, every one by another, and every one by his neighbor. The child shall behave himself proudly against the ancient. Man. And the base against the honorable. When a man shall take hold of his brother of the house of his father, saying, thou hast clothing, but be thou our ruler, and let this ruin be under thy hand. Now look what he says down in verse 12. As for my people, children are their oppressors, and women shall rule over them. No offense, ladies, but that just ain't the way God set it up. You say, who's supposed to be in charge? The man. The man's supposed to be in charge. And here's what we do. Sarah Palin was running a few years ago, and honestly, I would have rather had Sarah Palin than the president we have today. But at the same time, you know what I'm doing? I'm sitting here thinking, I know where this is going. God says when I begin to judge a nation, women become the rulers. And the sad thing is even as Christians, you know what we do? We push our girls. You grow up and you be something. You be in charge. You do this. And you can do that. And you can do this. We go against Scripture raising our own children, our own girls. And you ain't got to take that from a man. Who do you think you are? You ain't got to take that. Who's that guy think he is? I'm just telling you, when God begins to judge a nation, in verse 12, this is God. This is what God's saying, not jackbutts. As for my people, children are their oppressors, and women rule over them. And when you begin to look around and you begin to see America, and they begin to change words like, instead of the chairman of the board, they got the chairperson of the board now, because so many women are in charge. And you say, what do you think? It don't matter what I think about that, right or wrong. You say, what are you doing? What I'm trying to get you to see is this. In 2 Peter chapter 2, God judged some people. He judged some people. He judged those angels. He judged Noah. And He judged Sodom and Gomorrah. And when God begins to judge a nation, He says, I'll show you the criteria. I'll show you the characteristics. Here's what's going to happen. Here's what's going on. And when we look around America today, folks, I'm telling you, everything we've read, it's there. It's a joke. We're talking about over there with Belshazzar with those cups and all that stuff, just making light of God and making light of the God of heaven, and we do it in America every day. It's jokes from daylight to dark about religion and God and all that, and we do it. Leviticus 18, abortion, adultery, all those things going down that list, that's us. America, children, neighbors, we're scared of our neighbors, we're afraid somebody's going to kill us. I mean, you pull up at a red light today, you don't know if somebody's going to carjack it. I mean, you don't know what's going on anymore. I mean, that's just the way it is. And you say, that's right there in the Bible. You say, when does that happen? When God begins to judge a nation, here's what begins to happen. You say, you think America's under the hand of judgment? You better believe it. Yes, I believe it. I believe it's going down, and it's going down.
And I believe that it can change. Do I believe it can? Sure, I believe it can change. I mean, 2 Chronicles 7:14, if my people, which are called by my name, it's up to us to turn around and go that way. That's what it's for. Now, look back over at 2 Peter. Get 2 Peter chapter 2. Go back over there. We are eat up with things that God has given us the opportunity to do because He's blessed this country that other nations don't have those opportunities. You look at the Olympics, and we're all excited because we got the most medals. America did. And, man, look at America. Look how great we are. Well, I'll tell you why we got the most medals. Because God's blessed this country so much, we have the opportunity for people to excel at those things and not have to worry about when they get... I mean, these guys are on strict diets. I mean, they get up and it's, I'm going to eat this, going to eat this at 8 o'clock, eat this at 8:30, I'm going to exercise, I'm going to push this, I'm going to do this, I make this. Right when I get done with this exercise, I need this protein because that's when it's going to... And then I'm going to train, I'm going to do this. I mean, we're going up against countries where guys get up and they ain't worried about what they're eating. They're worried about, are they eating? And God has blessed America with all that stuff, and we put that stuff in us, man, and we look at that stuff, and we think it's so good, and it's because of the opportunities that we have that other people don't have, because God's blessed us so much. And we just use it, and we bow down to it, and we worship this in America, and we just think that we've really done something. But it ain't us. It's God that's blessed us. In 2 Peter chapter 2, he says, for God, verse 5, let's go to verse 5. And spared not the old world, but saved Noah the eighth person, the preacher of righteousness, bringing the flood upon the world of the ungodly. So you see there that Noah there went through that judgment just like America is going through. Now look in verse 6. He says, and turned the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah into ashes, condemned them with an overthrow, making them an example unto those that after should live ungodly. Now living ungodly there, what does that mean? He says live ungodly. Why? What was God calling ungodly? It was their lifestyle in Genesis there with Sodom and Gomorrah. What was their lifestyle? It was homosexuality. It's obvious. Turn over to Genesis chapter 19. Genesis chapter 19. And you're going to see some characteristics of these homosexuals here in Genesis chapter 19. And God's gave us this for an example for us to learn by. And what you learn is this right here, is that... That these homosexuals are always looking for somebody new. You say, why? Because of diseases. That's why. You've got NAMBLA, the North American Man-Boy Love Association. That's what NAMBLA stands for. And you know what they're trying to do? They're trying to get Congress to pass laws that kids that are 10 and 11 and 12 years old can choose who they want to go to bed with and it won't be statutory rape. That they'll drop the age of consent. You say, why? So they can go in there and brainwash a 10-year-old boy. You say, why? So they can get somebody young that's never been defiled. They're always looking for somebody new. You say, what's that got to do with this? Look in Genesis chapter 19. Chapter 19 says, and there came two angels to Sodom at even, and Lot sat in the gate of Sodom, and Lot seeing them rose up to meet them, and he bowed himself with his face toward the ground. And he said, behold, now, my lords, turn in, I pray you, into your servant's house, and tarry all night, and wash your feet, and you shall rise up early, and go on your ways. And they said, nay, but we will abide in the street all night. And he pressed upon them greatly, and they turned in unto him, and entered into his house. And he made them a feast, and did bake unleavened bread, and they did eat. Now look at verse 4. But before they lay down, the men of the city, even the men of Sodom, compassed the house round about, both old and young, all the people from every quarter. And they called unto Lot, and said unto him, where are the men which came into thee this night? Bring them out unto us, that we may know them. You say, what is that? They saw two new men in the city. Two new men. You know what they wanted? Something new. Give them to us, Lot, that we may know them. You don't have to go three chapters in the Bible to find out the definition of what it means when somebody's going to know somebody. It's knowing them sexually is what it's talking about. And I don't have time to go through Genesis chapter 19 here. I don't want to fly through it. We'll go through it next week. It's already 15 till. We'll go ahead and take a break. But what we're talking about here is this, is judgment. And God's judging America, and He's not judging America because of lost people. Lost people act like lost people. Look over, get 1 Timothy before we close. Lost people act like lost people, and Christians shouldn't act like lost people. And what will save America are not lost people trying to act like saved people. It's not going to. It's not going to save America. Christians have to begin to quit getting so distracted with everything that's going on and compromising the way we do and get serious about God. In 1 Timothy chapter 2, here's what he says. I exhort therefore that first of all, supplications, prayers, intercessions, and giving of thanks be made for all men, for kings and for all that are in authority, that we may lead a quiet and peaceable life in all godliness and honesty. And see, that's to Christians. And if you want to be able to have a godly life, a peaceable life, then if all the Christians begin to pray and get right and do what they're supposed to do, confess their sins when they messed up, quit compromising, quit trying to act like lost people, then God would be different. And the promise there is we'd be living a peaceable life, just like it used to be done. But what happens is we don't. And then God, there in Isaiah chapter 3, where we're scared to death of our neighbors. What's our neighbors going to do? What are they going to break in and steal? What are they going to do? That's what we're scared about. And the answer is not with the lost people. The answer is with us as Christians. And not just as far as this nation goes, but our own lives. Our own lives. God starts with us. If we don't want judgment here in our own lives, we've got to do the same thing. Because you know what God said? Here's the examples. Christian after Christian after Christian after Christian has messed up in their life. But we look at it and we think, I believe I can get by. I don't think I got to be that holy. That's our attitude. All right, let's take a break.